The Right Question is funded by the Steele Reese Foundation, by Humanities Montana, and by listeners like you.
What is your Indian name?
My Indian name is Sungpe, and it was given to me by my great-great-grandmother. When I was born, I had kind of reddish blonde hair, so she said my hair was just like a muskrat. So Sungpe means muskrat.
Welcome to The Right Question, a literary program that features writers from the Western U.S. I'm Cherie Newman, talking with Minerva Allen, who is a Nakota Assiniboine poet, elder, and guardian of culture. I see from the introduction to your poetry collection, which is called Nakota Sky People, that you had a lot of grandmothers. You say, I never ran out of babysitters. What was your early life like?
When I was a young girl, I was raised by my grandparents. All their children had grown up. And then, I have a lot of grandmothers, which I mean is they were sisters to my grandmother. My grandmother was Lucille Bullcap Chopwood, and she had about she had one sister, her own, but she had others that were her cousins, her first cousins. In our native customs, all first cousins are your sisters, are your brothers. So that's why I had a lot of grandmothers, because they were all cousins of my grandma. So they treated me like I was their granddaughter. That's one thing that all the native people have, is that their first cousins are their brothers and sisters. And if you could ask any tribe, that's the way it is.
And you have a lot of job titles with the Nakota people. You are vice president of Fort Belknap College, which is now Onion Nakota College, just recently had a name change. We're talking at the Senior Center, and you are working with some other women, and you're taking fabric and making all kinds of things, blankets and clothing and pillow covers. Mm-hmm. And you're in charge of that also?
Yes, I formed it because the tribe had asked me to come and take care of the building because they needed an overseer of the building. And they asked me if I'd come, and I said, yeah, I'd come. And I told him I'd volunteer. Because I'm retired, and so this gave me something to do, and I didn't need the pay.
So everything that you and the other people here are making, what happens to it?
We sell it wherever we can. Sometimes we take some things down to the tribal office or to the Indian Health Service, and we sell down there. And then a lot of people come out and buy our blankets and stuff, because they use them a lot for giveaways and to give to people. And so it's being handy here, because everything I've given is donated from other kind of groups and people from the churches, from different places. We don't spend no money on getting the material. And some of the old ladies are so creative that they make everything from dolls to whatever out of the material and stuff. So it's a lot easier for us to sell it to the community and to other people for a minimum price than they would get if they had to go buy it some other place.
Mm-hmm. And you're also a writer. You
yes.
have a fairly recent book of poetry, as I mentioned, The Nakota mm-hmm. Sky People. And I'm wondering if you would just choose a couple of poems in here and tell us about them and then read them for us.
Okay. Well, I like to read this one about the gumbo lily, because it's a plant that grows in the gumbo. And we always called it a lily, but it has another name. And so this remind me of a story that a lady told me, and I thought she sounded like the gumbo lily, which only comes up for a while, lives about 2 weeks, then it dies. Okay, so this is the poem about Gumbo Lily. There was a lady, Gumbo Lily, who lived among the blue shale flats. She lived alone among the tall, whispering pines and listens to the birds and the eagles during the summer. And in the winter, she listens to the new snowbirds and the magpies. Her grandfather said they were his brothers. She knew there would be meat and her family would bring her deer. She lived alone, this Gumbo Lily, on the blue shale flats. She loved life as it was. And one day she met a man. And this man, so dear to her, she thought there was no other. Together they lived without a fight. And one day he had to go away, and he did. They said, "Do not watch which way he goes. Don't look longing at the road that he went down, or he will not return." And yet she did. She looked on the long road where he left and hoped someday he would return. She went ahead and lived on her blue shale flats. And Gumbo Lily realized her man would never return. She realized that she had watched him go and hoped it wasn't true that he would never come back. And he never did. And every year the Gumbo Lily grows in the prairies in the spring and dies within 2 weeks, and waits another year to bloom, the Gumbo Lily who lives on the blue shale flats. I have a hard time with S's because of my native language. See, I speak native language from that time when I was a little girl. My grandfather had to take me to a school teacher at 5 to teach me English, because he didn't want me to have trouble when I went to school, because he always had this thing in his mind, like I always thought that, he said, during your time, the country's going to change, the people are going to change, and English is going to become the language, so you better learn it. And then one thing he said he wanted me to do was to become educated. And he had me promise him that I would be educated so that I could help everybody. He said, and so he said that you can survive in the country. And then again, he said, you look like a white lady. So he said that you better do something and become somebody, and I'm depending on you to do it. So I said I would.
Well, you certainly have.
And yeah, and so that's how, and so, but then see, we don't have seven vowels or seven, mostly vowels and words in our alphabet, like SHs and Vs and Js. If you notice our, if you look at our printed language, you'll find out they don't have any. We don't have SHs. So I have a hard time. When I speak English, I'm getting better, but I used to have to think of it in Indian and then say it in English. And sometimes I do that. I'm always trading words. You know, I've did it in college and everything. I had a hard time in college at first, but after I caught on, I used to try to write one paragraph. Then I take this paragraph and I'll turn it around and I'll write the same thing, but I'll write it all together in different words, because I figured they must didn't know what I said the first time, so I'm going to tell them the second time. And I used to always get checked for that in English. So that's why I can't speak SHs. So I have a hard time with SHs. And let's see. I write a lot about my people, because I try to write the right thing so that they will know how things, you know, that we live and stuff. Well, I'll read this one about grandmother. She's old and withered and faded, her face a map of wrinkles, trails of her life's travels. She sits in her corner and smokes a pipe. Hide bags hang above her head. All she owns where she can reach. Children come and sit. "What do I have for you today?" Her bright eyes gleaming as she relates her stories. With great wonder, they listen. Time flies. She smiles, her face changed as she tells what she knows best while puffing on her pipe. The magic leaves when she knocks the pipe against the can. emptying the ashes. She waves her hand towards the door, and off until tomorrow.
That line where you say the magic leaves when she empties the pipe, can you tell me about that?
Well, that symbolizes that she tells the stories, and maybe these stories are about something that happened that the kids were so memorized about. Like she tells, in the wintertime, she tells about Inkdomi. Inkdomi is one of the trickiest and the teacher of all the Indian people. He does things and he tells them things that teaches them. And so it is passed down by the old people to teach the kids how to obey, or if they didn't do what they were told, well, this would happen to them. Or if they did this, what Inkdomi did, see what happened to Inkdomi, and that's why what will happen to you. And it was things that to teach them how to live in the life that they were leading at that time.
And so she would light the pipe while she told the stories?
Yes. And then in between, you know, when the native people tell stories, they will stop at a paragraph that we say is a paragraph, and they will smoke their pipe or they'll sit there. And the kids are so anxious to go on to the other that they have the greatest attention.
And so they're waiting while the pipe is being smoked.
Mm-hmm. And then she just holds it because it burns for a long time, you know, in the tobacco. And then it's not the regular tobacco that we have to this day. It's homemade tobacco that they make and they pick from different herbs and different trees and the inner bark of different trees. And so that it's not as bad to smoke, like they say. The Indians smoke a lot. Yes, now they smoke a lot and get cancer, but in them days they smoked a lot and didn't get anything because it was not, no additives to it.
Tobacco with no chemicals.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They got it from the larb or this red willow or whatever they bear root or whatever they picked, and they made their tobacco.
Can you read a poem in your Nakota language?
Yeah, I can. Okay, this one's about you went to war. Zuya inane. Oya bi wachijare. Onshimagia cheya wa on. Teha wanchim nagint. Eha de wanji chik suye. Zuya inane, woye hi wa chimnage, unshimagia, chea wa un, chande misija, haya keja, wake suye, haya keja, wichonia wake suye, o tue da echia wa chimnaginkta, jeche zuya inane, Woye bi wachijare, woya bi wachijare, cheyawaon. Wana teha waknik deno, iache makoche, jechio da wachim nagingt, oya gihi unkash, mi eksuyeshi. I'll read it in English now. You went to war. Have pity. I go crying. I will not see you for a long time. One of these days I might forget you. You went to war. I will write to you. Have pity on me. I'm going crying. My heart is sad. I will not forget yesterday. I will not forget yesterday. When you came home to this place, I want to see you again. You went to war. I'm going crying the long way home to the mountain country. That's the way I'm going home. Do not forget me.
You've been listening to Minerva Allen read from her collection of poems, Nakota Sky People. This is The Right Question. I'm Shereen Newman. If you just joined us, or you'd like to listen again or share this program with a friend, You'll find the audio online at mtpr.org/twq. We'll be right back to talk about the effect Indian boarding schools had on Native families and to hear Minerva Allen read from another of her books, which is titled Stories from the Elders, Nakota Horse Society. Stay tuned. Up until, maybe a few decades ago, your language wasn't written down.
Nope.
Is it challenging to see it rather than hear it and to write it down?
Well, the reason why I like to write it, see, I've did curriculums after curriculums. I worked for the Hayes School, Hayes Lodgepole School. I worked at the high school for 30 years as an administrator and as a grant writer. And I had a bilingual program, which I funded, that English was a second language. So then I had K through 12th grade, and I had classrooms. And when they'd go through their regular classroom, then they had 40 minutes, I think, with each with a bilingual class during the day. So what I did is that nowadays, most of the Native children are not bilingual. A lot of them were straight English. Their parents and their grandparents spoke Native. But because of the treatment that they had, their parents had from their schooling, that they couldn't speak their language. So they decided not to teach their children and their children's children because they didn't want them to get treated the way they did when they used to speak. So they kind of lost the language at that time.
Because the schools were all run
some
by
were
the
run
state.
By parochial. Some of them was run day schools, they call them, was run by Bureau of Indian Affairs, so they couldn't speak the Native tongue. And then but it wasn't really the parochial schools, like they say, or either the BIA, because Congress had passed a bill back in the early 1800s when they first started, saying that they were that that was prohibited.
In the early 1800s?
Yes, when they first came to find the Indians and they had to civilize the Indians. So they said that they couldn't speak their native language.
And so the children who went to those schools, then when they had children, they didn't want their children to suffer the way they had when they were reprimanded for speaking their language.
Yes, and not only that, they started the boarding schools in also in the 1800s, getting the children away from their family because they felt that as long as they stayed with their family and went to school, they'll still speak the language. So they sent them to boarding schools, in which it was good, maybe in a way, but it was bad in another way because they lost their culture and also everything that they knew. And when they came back, they even lost their skills of parenting. And that was one of the worst things on earth. That is the parenting skills that you have to do when you have children. You don't have them parenting skills because you never got it from your parents because you weren't with your parents. You were with matrons and different things that didn't have parenting skills. So when you came home and tried to start a family, you didn't have those parenting skills.
You also lost social skills, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. And that was it's still devastating. That some of these people, they didn't know how to raise their kids, you know, and then they end up with all the rest of the evils in the world. They end up with a lot of their kids been taken away. And then after the boarding school time, then they start taking kids away from the Indian people and having other people adopt them. So then when they were 18, they would come back because they found out that there were Indians. Some of them was 30 years old when they found out they were Indians and came back to look for their ancestry. So I said, you know, even to this day, a lot of them were given away, and a lot of them were abused where they were given to, too. They weren't all treated like they were their children, you know. So that, there was a lot of hardship in that. A lot of the young girls came back with babies from these white parents and stuff that they were given to, or their people, you know. So it was hard when they came back, and then they had to try to learn the cultural and the you know, the language and different things all over again.
Those are hard stories to hear.
It is. It really is. But it happened, you know.
Yes, I know, and I can say it's a hard story to hear, but I didn't have to live it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then see, now we're working really hard. One of my jobs, where I've always been, is getting the kids back to know about their culture, their traditions, their values, their language. I've been doing that now for, God, nearly all my life, I think. And I'm still doing it. Like every Tuesday, I have an Assiniboine class here, a Nakota class, from 6 to 8 in the evening for families and children both. And then we talk about everything under the sun. Long time ago, Native stories. We talk about how people, and then we have 1 hour maybe of class of language. Then we go on talking about all the stories, the cultural things. And I learn a lot from the people that come too. And so with that, we try to instill it all back into our children, because we believe that this alcohol and drugs would really be helped to curb if they knew their identity and they knew their language, and that helps them to heal.
Mm-hmm. And they feel connected.
Yeah. We have sweats. Ever so often, they have sweats for the young kids, for all the adults or whatever, so they could cleanse themselves. And we have Native singing classes where these young, older people or the middle-aged people and stuff work with the kids to learn to sing so they can let out whatever, like me, writing poetry. The reason why I start writing poetry, I was very young. I was the only child. I had two brothers and a sister, but they went with my mother. And when they got a divorce, my mother took my younger brother and went to work and left. Of course, I was always situated with my grandparents. So my dad took the other two and left. And my dad was a white man. And the marriage, when they got married, didn't last very long, maybe about 4 years or so, because of the difference of the cultures. He come from a family, you know, that lived in a house with running water and everything, and he comes here and we're still trying to live in log houses and trying to survive, and he couldn't stand that. I guess it just was not compatible or something while he left.
And so you started writing poetry to get some of those feelings.
Yes, because I always felt my folks didn't want me, but it wasn't that. It was just that I was so situated with my grandparents that. And then the tradition, there's a tradition in the Nakota Assiniboine people, is the oldest has to learn all the language, all the tradition, all the cultural things and stuff like that, so they can contain it and pass it on to the others if in meantime the older people pass away or something. So that was one of my roles.
You also have another book titled Stories from the Elders, Nakota Horse Society. So this is part of your mission of being a keeper of the culture, really. Yeah. Is what you're doing.
Yeah, and that book is it's in all the schools now all over Montana.
Is there something in there that you would read or talk about?
Yeah, each story is done by one of the people that was working for me as a volunteer elder. And every one of these stories are elder stories. Oh. There's some about some of these guys going on war parties. Some of them is about just things that happened within their lifestyle. Some are not only of our tribe, because we're all intermarried into different tribes. So some of it's about the Blackfeet and, you know, how different ones did something in their life and how things are named. And like I was telling you, we have Ink Domi, and he's one of the trickiest and one of the ones that does stuff so that he teaches you. They're all different stories. They're not all Ink Domi stories. There's horse stories. And here's a short one I'll read you about the eagle, the elk, and the warrior. One day a Cheyenne warrior was hunting alone on foot. He came upon an elk lying dead by the side of a stream. Trapped in the antlers of the fallen elk was a large spotted eagle. The eagle spoke to the hunter and said, "Free me from here and I will give you a gift." The warrior did as the eagle requested. He left the elk's horns and the eagle was free. So the great bird flew away. It said to the warrior, "Go over the hill and you will see your gift." Then the bird was gone. The warrior climbed the hill, and when he reached the top, he looked into the wide valley. There at the foot of the hill was a horse, the coat the same black and white as the eagle feathers. This horse was the eagle's gift. Indians like horse stories because it reminds them of how they used to be, you know, had horses to live with and to fight with and to carry their burdens and their people. And I have some here just like human interest stories that they wrote, like about rainbows and a quarrel between a prayer chicken and the jackrabbit to see who was better food. And so they have a lot of stories like that. And I'll read one about rainbows. One summer day, the flowers were blooming in the breeze, showing their colors. The Great Spirit heard them talking. "Where will we go in the wintertime? The north wind brings pretty snowflakes that cover us up." The Great Spirit thought about this. He decided that the flowers should not die when the snow comes. So now every fall he gathers all the beautiful flowers, and the warm south wind blows them into the sky. After a rain, if you look where the earth meets the sky, you will see beautiful flowers will be made into a rainbow. So that's what they tell the little kids. Sometimes the kids wanted that to read that to them because, you know, it looks and they feel sorry for the flowers. And when you tell them that they become a rainbow in the sky, then they feel a lot better.
Well, we have time for one more poem.
Okay, I'll read this one. It's about Nakota women. "We are the ones who walk together in the great circle of life and look through eyes that reflect our lives. We answer in thoughts in each other's mind. My heart fills with joy when I see you and know you understand. We who stay home from wars and build our lives and pick up the pieces. We are the keeper of love and sanity who follow the trails into the unknown. We clean and put together what was once a family. We are burden carriers. We keep the circle of life together for our people."
Minerva Allen lives in Lodge Pole, Montana, on the Fort Belknap Indian Reservation. You'll find more information about her at mtpr.org/twq. And while you're there, be sure to click over to our Facebook page.
The Right Question is produced by Cherie Newman, with help from Barbara Thoreau, Lisa Simon, David Moore, and Kim Anderson. Michael Marsalek, executive producer. Beth Ann Austin, studio engineer. Music for this program was written and performed by John Floridis. Thanks for listening and for supporting this program.